This episode of Recovery Rocks is sponsored by SoberLink. And Lisa and I know that it's not just recovery that rocks, but waking up clear-headed rocks, remembering what you did the night before rocks, and so does establishing healthy relationships and accountability with the people that you love.
And we know that can be hard. SoberLink's remote alcohol monitoring system is designed to help you reclaim stability in your life and sustain a sober lifestyle. It's trusted by thousands of treatment professionals nationwide.
Click the link in our show notes to learn more about SoberLink and get $50 off your device. Shout out to SoberLink.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. It's Lisa, and I am here, as always, with my BFF.
Tawny, hello.
She was holding out on me there. And we are here today with the ultimate queen, Anna David, who you all know, I think, that I'm obsessed with, have always been obsessed since I found her. Even though we can't find the root of my Googling, I know I found her by Googling when I was early in sobriety. And you, welcome,
you
Anna.
Told me, thank you. I will never forget. You told me you Googled cool sober women.
Cool sober women. Like,
that sounds weird that would, but I believe you. I believe
because it was bad. And also because you're like, oh, all these people pop up. But you have to remember, this was how many years ago, right?
Yeah.
A lot. Yeah. I have 19 years sober now, which is crazy.
Fuck. Yeah.
And 22. You've got what? 22.
Yeah.
God, you're amazing. You're amazing.
7.5.
Yes.
So cute, Tawny. That's so cute.
I'm a third grader.
Yeah.
Well, Anna, welcome back to Recovery Rocks. We have talked with you in the past about various projects, all of which everybody should check out. And obviously, we'll have all the details on that in the show notes. But we wanted to talk about your latest book coming out. You want to tell our listeners a little bit about it?
Yes, I do. Thank you. It's it's called On Good Authority, 7 Steps to Prepare, Promote, and Profit from the How-To Book that will make you the go-to expert. And you guys know, it's hard to remember your subtitles sometimes, right? Like, I couldn't tell you the subtitles for, like, at least 4 of my books. Tawny, do you know your subtitle?
Yeah, mine, it's changed a few times, but the subtitle is A Guide to Dating, Relating, and Hooking Up Without the Booze.
It's really good. But it's amazing how much iterating it takes to get the right subtitle. Lisa, you were brilliant.
A memoir. There really wasn't much else to say.
I mean, when you really get the title right, so that it doesn't require any explanation, like my book, Make Your Mess Your Memoir, I didn't have a subtitle because I was like, I said it.
It's perfect.
It was perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
So this one is all about something you guys know a lot about, which is writing a book that builds your authority so that you can then be an expert on the topic and do speaking gigs and have consulting and be the go-to person for that topic. And it's really all related to like what we were just talking about how Lisa found me. It's like, I write this humorous book about my, a novel about my recovery. And suddenly I'm a quote, recovery expert.
Party and girl, everybody should read it. Yeah.
Yes. Remind us the title.
I mean, how could anyone forget Party Girl? And we are in the process of signing a new deal for the movie. Like, this has just gone on and on and on. But actually now there's a budget for it. So it really will get made at this point.
Oh, my God.
I think it's important to remember this, like, Party Girl came out. This is before the term quitlet was a thing.
Yeah.
This was like, there was not a lot of books like this. And I always talk it up when I can, because most quitlet is nonfiction, but I think there's a lot to there. I think there's so much to learn from fiction. So, you know, if you're listening and you want to read something about sobriety, but a little different because it's a novel, check out Party Girl.
But it is based on your life.
It, yes. Yeah.
if I had known now what I knew, you know, whatever, I would have done memoir. I didn't know this Quitlet thing was going to come. I didn't know any of it. I just was like writing what I thought was a story that I really wanted it to be funny because I thought that that would engage more people and that would have engaged me. I didn't know the more earnest thing was going to really take off, that like we were going to live in a Glennon Doyle world. Like I had no way of knowing any of this shit. And so, you know, Rachel's Holiday is a book that I had read, which is amazing book. It is a funny novel about recovery. So I knew it could be done. So it came out in 2007 and it was acquired in this like big, bold thing. And there was all this buzz. And then Judith Regan was fired 3 months before and the entire division dissolved. And so it was all this hype and then the sales weren't good because there was back then it was like you had to be in Borders and Barnes and Noble. There was no one to sell it there,
right?
To pitch to the store. So despite all the buzz, it never sold very well. But like there was a big movie bidding war and all this stuff. And then, you know, I get an email, they hire the woman who wrote Reality Bites. Like we've talked about all this. It was crazy. They were like, when I was being wooed by the different producers, they said, if you just name your screenwriter you want and that's how they got me. I was like, well, obviously the woman who wrote Reality Bites. And they were like, you got it. And then the way Hollywood works, I just never heard from anyone again. And CAA sent me an email that says, congratulations, your rights have reverted back to you. And I'm like, I wrote back, what does this mean? And no one ever responded. And so I feel like I've already like talked about this on this podcast, but years past, I write an essay about that. And the woman who wrote Reality Bites, Helen Childress, saw the essay and wrote me and said, did they never send you the script? And I was like, I never even thought that was real. I thought that was Hollywood talk. And she's like, here's the script. And she sends me my favorite writer who wrote my favorite movie, writing a screenplay based on my book, which was based on my life from a decade before. It was so surreal. But that one fell apart. And so now I wrote the script a couple years ago and now it's being made.
So exciting. I'm coming in.
It's about damn time.
Yeah.
It's as Lizzo said.
As Lizzo would say, it's about damn time.
And as I would say, Lisa, you are coming to the premiere. Whatever Italy trip you've got going on is going to happen. And you too, Tawny.
Yeah, we will both be at the premiere. Yeah. Easily.
Yes.
Hands down. Now that I've attended one premiere, I know everything.
Right.
So. Yeah.
You're pretty addictive. You have never been to a premiere.
It was fun. I went to the Single Drunk Female premiere. I'd never been.
You're very fabulous, Tawny.
Mean,
we know that.
Well, okay, let's talk more about this new book because, as you know, I've taken tons of your classes. Because I've always wanted to write a book about sober sex and dating, which thankfully I have, and it comes out in September. Our friend Ruby Warrington, who coined the term sober curious, she started calling me the sober sexpert because, like you're saying, I was writing and talking about this topic.
Yeah.
So it really is like this, the book that you're your new book, it sounds like exactly something that I needed when I was trying to, you know, create this path.
Well, you very organically, both of you actually very organically did what this book describes because you were led by a passion. So you were writing for Playboy, you were writing these stories, and you were really clear that you wanted a traditional book deal, no matter how much I tried to talk you out of this. And we'll discuss after your book comes out.
We'll talk about it at the premiere.
We'll talk about it at the premiere. But most people are not as clear. And most people, I mean, the way I try to always tell people is, so it's like I have worked with people, somebody who wrote a memoir about his unconventional recovery from cancer, a woman who wrote about the tragic death of her son. And when I started working with them and I'm like, you should coach people, they go, that's crass. Why would, no. And I've really shown them, it's like when people pay, they pay attention. And if you read a book that changes your life, I just recently had this happen where I read a book that describes somebody in my family in a way that had just blew my mind. And I'm thrilled she offers coaching. So people have this idea that if they're writing about something that really matters and they're writing to help, helping people and making money are not mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. And so really the book is about how do you take something you're really interested in, figure out who you serve, who is your reader, and what do they want, and how can you serve them further, and then build a whole profile around that. And again, it's like you guys have done this very organically, but had someone told you, oh, here's what you should do. You should have a newsletter. You should start posting this stuff. Like, it probably could have saved you several years. And you guys took the fast road. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We just said, screw it, we're starting a podcast.
Yeah, but you know, Lisa, you were, you know, the minute your book came out or even before, you know, you became this spokesperson for, you know, professionals, but mostly lawyers and drinking and tawny and the sex. And so, yeah, the book is
how
basically.
I get stuck with the professionals and she got the sex.
I know.
Tawny with the sex.
Tawny with the sex. I mean, I'm horrified that I used to talk about sex. I'm like, me? I used to like, there's a premiere, Tawny. You might want to fly out next weekend for Attack of the Show. I was on a TV show as a sexpert called Attack of the Show, where Olivia Munn
yeah,
and I
remember
gave
that
dating
show.
Advice. And the documentary about it is coming out, Attack of the Doc, next weekend. So,
I love
that. Premiere.
Where is it? Where can people watch that? Because that is that would be great to watch.
I don't know, but I mean, screw that. You should buy my book. Like, what?
Well, maybe that too.
You should be reading my book or listening to it on audio.
Yeah. Well, if you're not mutually exclusive, of course.
You're allowed to do it all.
Anna, how would this book help our listeners that, like, you know, our listeners are sober, sober curious? How, you know, the three of us know creativity is such a big part of our recovery stories. How would reading this book help them maybe take their recovery to the next level, their creativity to the next level?
Well, I don't know that it would do either of those things. What it would help them do is build a business and from their passion. I think that probably the people who listen to this show are, you know, I'd say 100% are in recovery, right? Or are family members of people in recovery. And I think what we've learned is often therapists are people who cannot be as successful at talking to people struggling with addiction or heavy drinking in a way someone has been through it. And I mean, I had an experience where like a huge celebrity, I'm sure I've dropped this before, reached out to me and said, I want to pay you $1,000 an hour to talk to me about my drinking problem. And I said, I'm not a coach. And he said, I don't care. I've been to every expensive therapist and I want the person who wrote Party Girl. So I think what people need to remember, and you don't, a book is the fastest way to establish authority. I'm so sorry to my, you know, great grandparents and grandparents who are obsessed with education. Education is wonderful, but it is not the way to establish authority. A book is. So if anybody listening is like, well, I mean, what? Can I really write a book about addiction? There's so many out there. Did you guys say that? And yet you did it. I mean, Tawny, yes. I'm sure, because there were so many by the time you did
it. Yeah, I mean, well, honestly, that's why I was writing this book as a memoir. And I was just like, do we need another white girl sobriety memoir right now? But I was still so obsessed with the topic of sober sex and dating. So, you know, what, like, it's only the only reason I made that pivot was because of the time, because there was already so many brilliant other memoirs out there. Like, how, yes, my story is a little different, but like I wanted my book to be a little bit different. So it was for me, once I pulled myself out of the story and I wrote about sober sex and dating from a journalistic perspective, that's really when the book came together.
Yeah. And I think that, so Lisa, how did you differentiate yours?
I had just, when I got out of the detox, I started reading every memoir I could find out there. And I was just like pulling whatever. I'm like, where is the story of the woman who was in a big corporate job, who didn't lose it all, who didn't crash the car, who people didn't know this was going on, including in work. I didn't see my own story. And yet I knew that there were so many people. I mean, I just remember sitting on my living room floor as when I was in the worst of the addiction, like sitting there with, I found some book about God or something like that. I was sitting on the floor with it and I had a big bottle of wine sitting next to me. And I remember just like weeping and feeling so alone, like, but also just knowing that it couldn't be just me. I couldn't be the only person in my position in like, you know, crazy job or whatever it was. And just having this awful secret. And so, that was sort of why I was like, I didn't see my story out there. And that was funny because that was one of the things that my agent said immediately was, you know, there is a place for your story on the addiction bookshelf. Like that's, and like Tawny's book now, right? There is a very specific place for Tawny's book on the addiction bookshelf. And it's weird now, I'll tell you, like the book's been out for like 7 years. And when I speak, you know, to law firms and whatever all over, like there is not another big law as what we call big corporate law firms in the legal profession. There's not another big law person like me, a woman telling their story. I think the difference too is that I'm, you know, I think Augustine Burroughs wrote Dry, which I all time, like I could not put that book down. It was hilarious. And that was, I was like, I need to write the female version of Dry. Because he was an ad exec. So we also share a sobriety date. So I took that as a sign.
Total sign. Well, and I think probably to speak to this point of what the point of my book. Did you think when you were writing your book, oh, I'm going to stop practicing law and become a full-time speaker and consultant?
No,
probably not.
No, I figured it would be like some people. First of all, I never really thought it would get published. And then when it was getting published, I was like, yeah, some people in big law will find this interesting because it's a dishy a bit about that world. And maybe some people in AA will read it. I didn't think it would sell. Yeah.
So I think that that's sort of the point. Like, I don't mean to sound Pollyanna, but I don't think any of us should be working for assholes. I'm sure your people were very nice. I worked for a lot of assholes. And when I realized that, like, that I could actually build a business around what I was passionate about, and that, like, my entire life changed. And I believe that's possible for anybody. And I think the main point, you know, is people were always coming to me and saying, would you write my book? And I always said, no, I hated traditional publishing. It took everything out of me. Because I kind of said yes to some things, I ended up being able to have a publishing company where I don't have to do the stuff I hate. In fact, I save people from the stuff I hate.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just going through this with a friend who's, you know, been a big reality TV casting person. She's like, I hate it. I don't want to do it. And I'm like, well, what if people, you could write a book and consult with people about how they can get on reality shows and they're paying you thousands of dollars to talk to them. She's like, ooh, I'd like that. So
I think that
what I want people to know is that anything is possible. Whatever they're passionate about or they have experience in, we are living in a golden era where they can set up a page in a day with a PayPal button and say, you know, email me for rates and they can consult. And so if somebody listening says, well, I'm sober, sure, but there are so many books written about it and what's different about my story, we three of us are testaments to the fact that, that's not a true thought.
And well, you know, it's also, I was just going to say, it's also the case that, you know, we say, oh, you know, it's all been done. But obviously it's all been done because people buy it. People are interested in recovery stories. People are interested in sober sex. I mean, this is when you did Party Girl, Tawny's book must have seemed like 1,000 years away that anybody would write that book, right? But
right,
I think Party Girl launched a lot, you know, and I think that's, you know, one of the things that happens is that when there is such an audience for this stuff that, yeah, you've got your piece of it, your story about it, or your specific thing. And that, and especially I love what you say about how you're helping people avoid what you did and what you hated, right? That is, it's continuing, it's helping. There's always like, there's something to me, like anything we do around recovery feels like at the end of the day, there is this piece that is really about helping the next person, right? And I mean, that's for you.
But I think when it comes to recovery specifically, people get confused because they're like, well, you should be doing that for free. If you are sponsored in a 12-step program, 100%, you need to be doing that for free. If it's outside of that, you know, I think you're, you know, it's this when people pay, they pay attention. Like you're helping people more often. So Tawny, are you doing any consulting around sober sex?
So not necessarily with sober sex, but I'm doing, I'm helping people work on book proposals, which I love. I love working on book proposals. I'm a weird writer who, cause you know, I have a business background. So like, I love the marketing shit. But I am making money doing public speaking, and leading workshops about sober sex and dating and relationships and all of that. And the book isn't even out yet. You know, like, you know, it really is like once you have the, like, it's almost like once you have the book deal almost, it was just like, okay, well, if she sold this idea, then you can do this. So that's been amazing. And it's also like, I think, what I was going to say earlier was there was this element, not necessarily imposter syndrome, but maybe self-awareness of like, okay, I'm not a mental health professional. I'm not a doctor. Who the hell am I to talk about this topic? And then, and like I said, that's when I really put on the journalism hat and I was like, okay, but what experience do I have? What expertise do I have? I have 7+ years of recovery. That is also 7+ years of journalistic research and interviews and reading and all of these things that I have done that no one else has done. Right. So, and that's where the interviews come in is like, I interviewed doctors and mental health professionals and neurologists. And because I did want that level of expertise. And I also acknowledge that's not where I come from, but you do need different balances to tell the story. So like, I share that because if someone's listening and they're like, well, who am I to tell a story? You have a story in you, you know, like check out Anna's book. You have a story in you.
I love that. And like, you know, I do think how many therapists did you go to that you lied to? I went to a lot.
Oh my God.
I wasted a lot of money. Whereas when it's somebody who feels like they're just further along in the path than you, you're so much more likely to open up. I remember when I first started going on TV after Party Girl, you know, I'm going on Today Show, I'm going on CNN, and it's saying addiction expert as my chyron. And I had a TV agent and I'm like, okay, should I go, like, I should go get a master's in psychology, right? Like, what do I need to do to justify this? And he looked at me like I was crazy and said, why would you need a degree? You have a book.
Yeah.
And that's really when I realized that that's what it takes to take your experience and make you an expert. And I think, you know, what I did with On Good Authority, I'm not good at like, I don't know if it's like a female, male thing, like being like, this is what you should do. Like the reason Make Your Mess Your Memoir is like half memoir, half here's what you should do is I didn't have enough in me to tell people what to do. So I took interviews from my podcast, also called On Good Authority, and their interviews with Robert Greene and Chris Voss and, Jay Abraham, all these like huge marketing and entrepreneurial experts, and took their advice and made it into a book, which you guys should do with Recovery Rocks. I mean, because I didn't know how to make a podcast into a book until I did it. And it was really a wonderful creative exercise to take these transcripts, these never ending transcripts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think what happens with podcasts too is you're going so fast and people are saying such gems and you're promoting that and then doing the next one. And like, until I actually took these transcripts, I was like, this is the best information I've ever read. What a gift to be able to take that and, you know, distill that into 200 pages, which is what the book is.
Yeah. So one of the things that I found really, like one of the things that kept me, you know, I wrote my book, I wrote before I went to work over the course in the mornings of, over the course of 10 years, but obviously it could have been shorter. But it was so cathartic. Right. It was so important for my own recovery and my own sobriety to write that kind of thing. Like, is there, like, how would you recommend, like, even just somebody who is like, I don't know if it's, you know, I'm where I need to be right now. I'm not whatever, but, you know, maybe one day it would be nice to whatever, just to start that kind of process of thinking about how to use writing as a catharsis and how to sort of just do it as you go along. I mean, you're such an expert in teaching writing and teaching people how to, you know, actually do it. What would, if somebody's out there listening now, sober, sober curious, whatever it is, and they're thinking about, like, I think I have some things I would want to say, or there's some things I want to process through just sitting down and writing them. What would you tell them?
I would say there's been nothing more healing for me than writing. Next to 12-step,
right,
EMDR, and writing, like the combination. But you know, I realized one of the greatest things about writing, and I realized this when I had that storytelling show, True Tales of Lust and Love, is I had the storytelling show and it became a book. And so women would get up and tell these stories of basically heartbreak. But because they were on the stage, they were the hero. And I saw that writing can make you the hero of your story, whereas you might, especially those of us who bottomed out in alcoholism or just heavy drinking, you know, you're the victim of your story. So by writing it, you have survived. And I actually had a thing that I recently had some of my students do, which is go to ChatGPT. I'm pro, I should just admit that, and say, tell the story of a blank, 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 whatever their biggest struggle is, through the framework of the hero's journey. And tell me how that changes your perspective on your life. And it was, people are quitting jobs now and, you know, and they're seeing because we're here, we're telling their stories, our stories. So it's like, if you're listening, first of all, New York Times reported that 81% of people want to write a book. I would bet probably 100% of people in recovery want to write a book. And like Lisa said, you don't have to maybe want it to be published to write it out and just get that perspective on your life. But if you do write it out, you can get that perspective and possibly have a new career helping people.
Exactly. Yeah. So true.
Yeah.
So true.
And so the book is kind of the unsexy parts, but the actual steps, you know, and the first step is who is your book for and what do you want them to do and why? So it's like, Tawny, if we're doing it with you, who's your book for? Sober people?
Anyone who wants to learn about why the role alcohol plays in their sex lives.
Sober and, or not.
Yeah,
sober anyone. And what is your why? Is it just to help people? Is it to continue, raise your speaking fees, start consulting? Do you, are you just going to see where it goes?
Definitely. Financial independence is a huge one. And then I think it's a balance of that and really just wanting to put the resource out there that I desperately needed. The amount of time I was Googling sober sex, sober dating, and like still there's not a ton of content out there.
Right.
I'm really excited that I am giving the world this book that I desperately needed. That is really exciting to me. And the fact that, like you said, because I write about this thing, I'm now the sober sexpert and I'm making money talking about this thing and the book isn't even out yet.
I mean, that's the thing is I think that people, we're weird. Our society is very weird about sex, but we're very weird about money. And we're very weird about where like commerce and art meet. And I'm sure people think it's crass the way I say, oh, you can make a lot of money from this. But is it crass to want to be paid for your time? You know, if we were living in the old publishing model where you're making money off of book sales, unless you're Lisa Smith and selling 40,000 copies, you're basically, it's a rounding error.
Wait, what did you say about my copies?
That you sell like 40,000 copies. You
oh, no, it's more than that.
If I didn't like you so much. What's the number? Tell the listeners.
In all, across all formats, so like the audio and everything, it's 100,000.
I didn't even know that.
You didn't know? It's in our thing we did together.
The 100,000?
Yeah. Copy.
So it's still selling. It's still selling like... Yeah. 5,000 a month.
Yeah, and I think it gets a lot of, it gets a lot of Audible. Doesn't, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been out 7 years. I think a lot is Audible, a lot is Kindle.
Yeah. It's still the only one written by a lawyer, too, like a female lawyer.
Well, it's
Brian
the
Cuban,
only one really Cuban, in my, there's no other, like, in my industry or anything. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so I think that is really where the message of like what I'm preaching now crosses over with your audience and who you guys are talking to is, you know, I think that it's very normal imposter syndrome to say, well, my story is not interesting enough. And you know, and I always say my story is not interesting and it's what I'm 12, you know, 10 books and thousands of articles. So it's how you choose to tell it and to kind of allow imposter syndrome to convince you that you're not worth it or you can't be an expert or an authority is possibly to not save someone's life that you could. I'm a big fan of, you know, establish your authority with a book and then go sell it and go help people.
Well, and yeah. I think that's the perfect way to wrap it up. And since you are on Recovery Rocks, we do need to know what music you're listening to right now.
I didn't think about it before. Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. So right now, I don't even know how to pronounce her name, but I'm all about SZA. Kill Bill. Mm-hmm. You know that song, Kill Bill?
She's amazing.
And I'm always a Swiftie.
Yes. Are you going to, did you get air? No, me neither.
Because my life is changing and she's not coming to LA till, but I heard that that Swifties are streaming it online, which maybe even.
I might do that. I mean, I got to see, I saw the Reputation tour and I'm like, I got to see her and I'm happy. Like I am seeing Blink 182 in a couple weeks. The OG, all three members. I'm excited about that.
Fun. I've seen Lizzo twice.
Yes. I saw Lizzo, was it last summer? Her most recent tour, Special, whatever that was. Lizzo's great. I like that we're beginning this episode and ending this episode with Lizzo.
As one always should. Oh, do you see? I'm way too fine to feel this stress. She's my higher power. So, you know, the line, I'm way too fine to feel this stress.
I love that Lizzo's your higher power.
A little bit.
That's a good higher power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anna, thank you for coming on.
Let everyone, we're going to include links to the book and everything, but just let our listeners know where they can find you and a launch pad if they want to work with you, all that.
Yes. Yeah. I should say our company works with entrepreneurs, you know, CEOs and founders on publishing a book, on writing and publishing books. The book On Good Authority, you can get on goodauthoritybook.com. I'm on all the social media thingies at Anna B. David. And find me.
All right. I'm telling you, find her. It changed my life.
I endorse this.
Until next time.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, And it is available bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at LisaSmithAdvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.